Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Dear colleagues, dear friends, it's a pleasure to welcome you here to the historical reading room here in the Peace Palace. And a special thanks, of course, to the Embassy of Norway for supporting this event, and of course to all of you who came long ways to be here with us for this event. We're also glad that the ICC is represented. Emmerich is at the back of the room. And we're also glad that we have members of the diplomatic community who join us here, which should make for a very exciting dialogue. I think we can really look forward to a very exciting set of papers. The theme of preliminary examinations is underexplored, and it seems to be really that excitement in the issue that brought us here. There will be, no doubt, differing views, perhaps some agreement, but also disagreement in the coming days. But the purpose of this conference is precisely to start dialogue on some of these foundations and maybe to bridge some of the gaps that we have between communities. There's some ongoing research on the topic. Ana Cristina Rodriguez does a PhD on the topic. Human Rights Watch does research. But I think generally the topic is really underexplored, and it cuts across disciplines. So let me just open with a few general reflections. First of all, what is the status quo? I think it's first of all important to note that preliminary examinations are under-researched. If you look into any of the big commentaries, they usually start with the triggering procedure and then they move on to investigation. And if you look even for the keyword preliminary examinations, you find it a little bit in the Triftera commentary. But there is really now, I think, structural thinking of how preliminary examination is organized and what its functions are. It remains to some extent a carte blanche. Here in this conference, we of course do not cover only international courts and tribunals, and particularly the ICC, but also domestic jurisdictions. And we're only at the beginning, I think, of a long journey. My second point is that preliminary examinations are unique. They differ, of course, in the context of each domestic system. And the ICC framework, again, is its own framework. It differs from domestic systems. So some people have argued that preliminary examinations are comparable to some extent to fact-finding operations. And Morten has already alluded to the first volume, which has been published. But fact-finding bodies obviously have a different mandate than preliminary examinations. They're basically geared to bring out human rights violations. But preliminary examinations have a more narrow scope. They serve as a gateway or as a filter for the criminal process. So the two are complementary rather than competitive, as one of our contributors puts it in the papers. Third, I think it's safe to say that preliminary examinations are one of the inventions of ICC practice. Hardly anyone expected that they would become as important as they actually have become in operation. Preliminary examinations have a strong expressivist function. Their impact basically exceeds their powers. So I think with respect to no other stage in the operation is this Cassese image of the giant without legs, I think, as pertinent as in relation to preliminary examination. This obviously has caused critiques by situation countries and by certain non-states parties. They feel that there's a certain lack of control over preliminary examinations, and only fragments of the preliminary examinations are regulated. There's a consensus that preliminary examinations cannot be merely grounded in prosecutorial discretion, but there's continuing debate to what extent there should be greater caution towards publicity or greater accountability for choices and to whom. Fourth, certain macro issues remain still to be determined. A couple of years ago, Mirjam Damaska, I think, wrote this really important essay, "What is the point of international criminal justice?" And I think Damaska's point, "What's the point?" applies equally to preliminary examinations. What is the point of preliminary examinations? Do they have a peripheral function, as Morten has argued, or does the function go beyond this? Is there any virtue in opening a preliminary examination irrespective of whether it might lead to an investigation? Can the opening of a preliminary examination be justified for purposes such as prevention or complementarity? And if so, do our underlying assumptions work? Preliminary examinations do not only carry opportunities, but they also cause risk. The risk is that the preliminary examination becomes an excuse not to proceed in the eyes of some. Fifth, I think as Judge Liu has said, preliminary examinations are closely related to politics. They involve leverage and power. Countries want to avoid to be listed as preliminary examination country because of the stigma and the scrutiny that it involves. But we still struggle to understand how this leverage actually works. Some argue that it's better to pass on to formal investigation, since investigation entails greater pressure for compliance. Others, particularly political science, tell us that it's precisely the unpredictability of preliminary examinations that makes them such a powerful instrument. So the methodology really differs across situations, and we hope to bring out this diversity basically through the different country studies that we will hear in the course of this conference. In public discourse, there's a tendency to minimize and to blend out discretion. But there are many elements that are de facto in the determination of the office of the prosecutor, such as the decision where and when to act on a proprio motu basis. It seems that there's a greater degree of discretion as to whether or not to act in the context of proprio motu proceedings than in the context of referrals. But it is questionable to what extent the OTP should negotiate its own engagement or even advise domestic actors on how to proceed. My sixth point is that it's becoming increasingly evident that whatever the ICC does will be subject to some form of critique from one side or the other. There is and will always be selectivity dilemmas. For instance, the opening of preliminary examinations involving certain big powers did not necessarily convince African states that the ICC is free of bias. They argued that the lack of passing on to investigation is actually a demonstration of bias against Africa. So the communicative function that is inherent in the conduct of preliminary examination certainly does not always work as it is supposed to. So if the ICC acts, it will be criticized, and if the ICC doesn't act, it will also be criticized. The real dilemma is that whatever the ICC done will either be under-inclusive or over-inclusive. So there's a clear damned if you do, damned if you don't dilemma. One theory to justify preliminary examinations is expressivism. Expressivist theories suggest that the function of criminal law lies not only in its ability to constrain and control crime, but to communicate and convey social meaning. And expressivism stresses the function of criminal law to reinforce social norms by signaling societal reproach. But expressivism only works if there is a link, a communicative link between the sender and the audience, and if it conveys a message basically that resonates with the audience. Obviously, all audiences read the message differently, so the message may get lost in translation in the dialogue between states, domestic societies, victims, and potential offenders. So the legal and factual reasoning that is often contained in relation to preliminary examination is often rudimentary. So preliminary examination, in my view, seems to really navigate between these two poles, between expressivism and pragmatism. Seventh, I think there's a clear need to discuss what can be done better. In the framework of this conference, we've tried to put the emphasis on three issues: understanding the political context and constraints, rethinking the legal framework, and improving methods and methodologies. So here are six questions that I would like to pose to everyone. First of all, is less more? Would the ICC be better off with dealing maybe with a fewer number of situations and depths rather than engaging with a large number of situations? Secondly, is there a need for on-site visit, better formulation of initial hypotheses in identifying potential cases during preliminary examination? Third, are the existing institutional structures that we have adequate, or do preliminary examinations require further investment into structure that make it work, including consultation, verification, and monitoring of domestic action? Fourth, is there a need for refinement of transparency policies, including greater distinction between what is made public and what is kept confidential? Fifth, does the relationship between pretrial and the prosecutor require further attention? And sixth, is the format of annual reports helpful? And does the reasoning provided, is it adequate? So these are obviously some of the questions that might guide our discussions. Obviously, our presentations and papers will bring out much more and many more elements in relation to preliminary examinations. So I really look forward to the debate with all of you over the coming 1.5 days.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.